Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi everyone, Matt here. Before beginning this week's episode of Broadway Breakdown, I want to direct you to some links you'll find in the description page for this episode and what they're for. Here at Broadway Breakdown, we fully support the Black Lives Matter movement, which on our part means continuous listening, educating, and donating, and the same goes for everyone. So here are a few ways you can help this week. If you're looking to support a Black-owned business, I recommend ordering books online from Semicolon Bookstore and Gallery. Whether you're looking to educate yourself or because you want to stop giving so much money to Amazon, Semicolon is a fantastic option with thousands and thousands of titles to choose from, including The New Jim Crow and Are You There, Goddess Me, Margaret, both of which I purchased last week. If you're looking for an organization to follow or donate to, please go to the website for the Transgender Law Center and check out both the Black LGBTQIA and Migrant Project, as well as Black Trans Circles. The Transgender Law Center is the largest trans-led organization in the United States and for almost 20 years has provided legal assistance for trans people and their families and fought to enforce laws and policies that protect them. The BLMP and Black Trans Circles are two subsets of the organization directly focusing on Black trans lives. Black Trans Circles focuses on building Black trans women leadership in the South and the Midwest and addresses oppression-based trauma and healing through it. You can join their email list by finding their page on the Transgender Law Center website or finding them on Facebook. And the BLMP is currently taking donations to help offer monetary assistance to all Black LGBTQIA migrant workers who have been affected financially by the COVID-19 pandemic. You can find their page on the Transgender Law Center's website as well. If you're looking to listen and to educate, the Broadway Advocacy Coalition is holding a 3-day forum this week for the Broadway community and members of the industry called Broadway for Black Lives Matter Again. The aim of this forum is to listen and to heal by holding ourselves accountable in the hopes of beginning the process to making the Broadway community more actively anti-racist. The forum begins Wednesday, June 10th, and you can register for each day separately at bwayforblm.org. Please note, though, that the first day, titled A Day of Healing, is intended to be a safe space for Black artists and members of the community to share their experiences and grievances, so please keep that in mind when looking for days to register. Once again, the links for all of these can be found in the description page for the episode. Thank you for your patience. Please enjoy this week's episode of Broadway Breakdown. Hello, everybody out there in our wonderful isolated quarantine universe. Welcome to another episode of Broadway Breakdown, my obsession. I am your essentially host for this series, Matt Koplik. With me today is a man, capital M-A-N, period. He has been in many a Broadway show. He has the most... I was going to say lustrous. I don't know if that's the right word. Lustrous voice, booming presence, and has been a fellow baker on a little-known web series called Baking in on Broadway. Welcome to the pod, Mr. Antoine L. Smith. Hello, Antoine.
Hello, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you, too.
Yes. How are you?
Just for the record, we are in separate places. We don't want people to, you know.
No, everyone understands.
In each other's face.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, so we are on a Zoom call. We both have our wonderful audio set up, and it's wonderful. I met Antoine a few years ago when he did Baking It on Broadway. He was in The Color Purple at the time. He's gone on to do two more major Broadway revivals, Miss Saigon and Carousel. And you were in Memphis before those three.
Correct. I want to say there was one more.
I want to say there was one more revival you were in before that. Am I making that up?
No, that's it.
Those are three major revivals.
Wait, which revivals did you say?
I said Color Purple, Miss Saigon, and Carousel.
Yeah, that's
those are the three
revivals.
So those are three. Every Tony season, 2016, 2017, 2018, you were in the revival for Best Musical cast, which is, I mean, that's good luck. I think if, you know, if Company or West Side Story or Carolina Change really wanted the edge for that Best Musical revival win, they would have put you in the Company. They're like,
yes, especially this is Carolina Change.
Oh, God. You'd be a really good dryer. What a weird sentence to say to a person. You make a really good dryer, but if you're a musical theater person, you know exactly what that means.
I will say I made it down to the final. And I just, that's it.
That's just how it goes. That's how it goes. Antoine, how did you get into this business we call show?
Oh, man. Well, first of all, my grandmother was a playwright when I was young. I remember being in her shows as early as 5 years old. So theater and the theatrics and the arts and music have always been a part of my life. Mm-hmm. And of course, I did the community theater thing. I did the high school musical.
What were your parts in the high school musicals?
Oh man, what did we do? We did Hello Dolly. I was one of the galloping waiters. We did Grease. I was Eugene. Guys and Dolls. I was Nicely. And actually my senior year, we were supposed to do West Side Story and I was Action, but it had to be canceled because of a situation that was needing to be dealt with. So we couldn't continue the production.
Say no more. If Broadway doesn't end up lasting for you, you could go into PR. You know how to say all the right words.
Well, thank you.
And then, correct me if I'm wrong, your first major gig was the national tour of Cats. Yes.
Let me rewind.
It has been 4 years since I interviewed you.
No. You are correct. Mm-hmm. My first major musical theater. But before that, I toured with Sesame Street Live for 2.5 years.
Mm.
As Big Bird.
That is
so technically my first big professional was that. But my first big professional musical theater where I wasn't inside of a 50-pound bird was playing a 180-pound cat.
So you had so much experience playing animals. And then from Cats, you went into Memphis. Is that correct?
From Cats, yes, that would have been my next.
And were you just like, finally a human? I'm playing a human being. I'm playing a person who stands on two legs.
Honestly and truly, yes, that is absolutely correct.
What is your, what's the memory of your first night on Broadway in Memphis? Like that's like burned in your brain.
Oh man, honestly, I was so nervous that I remember only certain parts of it, but I do remember that I made it through. Mm. But I, Antoine L. Smith, am not what you would call a dancer, not the way that people dance on Broadway, but I was cast in a role where I needed to kind of be that.
Mm.
And one of my dance partners, her name is Bahia, who is a legendary dancer, beautiful black dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very nervous to dance with her. And I had to do this one complicated lift at the beginning. And I told her, I said, I hope that I don't drop you because I'm not a partner, but I'm going to do my best. And she looked at me and said, you won't. And I was like, you're right, I won't. She put that fear in, and I don't even think it was coming from a malicious place. She was just like, oh, you won't.
No.
So don't.
Yes.
It was like one of those.
She's like, but that doesn't, she's like, that doesn't happen to me. So you won't be doing that.
Like, it doesn't happen to me, and it better not happen to me tonight.
Mm-hmm.
No, but like, she was beautiful, beautiful, beautiful lady. Great spirit. She held my hand through the whole thing. It was amazing. But yeah, you know, when you're in your first show and you're pumped and your adrenaline's going, you're just concentrating on doing everything right, and that's. Yeah. What I did, and by the end it was just a huge sigh of relief and no one was hurt, so
success. Perfect. And then from Memphis, did you go all the way to the end of the run with Memphis?
Yes, until August 5th 2012.
What was closing night of that show like?
Oh man, we were such an amazing family. All pretty much everyone from the original cast until those hired from October 9th, 2009 to August 5th, 2012, everybody came back. And at the end, all those people came on stage to do the final number of Steal Your Rock and Roll. And it was one of the most amazing moments of my career. I've since had some more amazing moments, but at that point, that was the most amazing. And, you know, we partied, we hugged each other, we laughed. And a huge amount of us are still very close. I mean, like, we speak almost every day.
That's wonderful.
You know, via group chat.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a pessimist at heart, especially these days. So it's nice to know when people in the theater community, like, are actually close and not just you know, hearts on Instagram, love you, mean it, that, like,
right,
you know?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Oh, no, we're absolutely close. Like, we have family gatherings. A lot of them have now have families, you know, children, new marriages, and yeah, and that, having the opportunity to see all of that.
That is wonderful. So speaking of, I just had this thought in my head with Caroline, any, like, wacky Broadway audition stories for our listeners out there, because, like, ones where it's just sort of like, either I can't believe I did that, or like, I can't believe that happened to me in the audition room.
Yes.
Traumatizing at the time, wacky now.
So I went in for the first Broadway national tour of Porgy and Bess, and I had the most music because I had the ensemble stuff and then understudy Porgy. And this is, I mean, the music sounds simple, but it's actually kind of complicated. So I go in, you know, I'm ready. I'm looking at my music. I'm ready to go. And the piano player could not play the music. And I'm looking at him, and he's looking at me, and I'm looking at the director like, this is not my fault. This is their fault. So I hope that you can see. And so we plowed through him playing wrong notes, me singing wrong notes because he wasn't playing the right note. So my ear was going to another. And needless to say, God bless Diane Paulus. She gave me the job anyway. But here's the icing on the cake. I ended up having to turn it down because I was cast in the Broadway production of Beautiful. So I had to
turn down.
No, yeah. Thank you.
I want to just also say as a PSA here, if anyone here thinks that playing Gershwin is simple, get the fuck out of my car. Like, that is the opposite
right.
of true. Gershwin
but
is
to
tricky.
Me, it's very tricky. And I was like, well, you guys didn't know that this person couldn't play the music, right?
Yeah.
It's like when you go into an audition and they say, bring in 32 bars of a gospel song. Now, when you say to me, Antoine L. Smith or any other black actor, to bring in 32 bars of a gospel song, you would think that they would have somebody on that piano that could play these gospel songs. And they never quite get it right.
Why do you think that is?
I truly have no idea. I just believe, like, if you're going to have auditions for specific shows and you want specific kinds of songs, mm-hmm. you need to find the correct piano player that can play the music the way that it needs to be played so that you can get the performance out of me that I know you want, mm-hmm. that I know you deserve.
Yeah. I mean, I guess people sometimes mistake, like accomplishment with experience, if that makes sense, you know,
right.
Oh, well, they're an accomplished musician. It's like, but do they have experience in this field? Like, right, have they lived with gospel music before? I feel the same way about jazz. You know, it's like, you can't just like play jazz if you've studied music all your life. Like, you have to really kind of lived in it, experienced it.
Right, right.
Yeah. This was, going on a small tangent for a quick second, a friend of mine who is really close friends with the music contractor, a former Broadway music contractor who did the Broadway production of Wild Party, the Lacusa Wild Party.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and it was very important to George C. Wolfe, the director, and Michael John Lacusa, who wrote the score, that everyone in the orchestra had like at least a decade's worth of jazz experience. Like,
George C. Wolfe does not play when it comes to specificity and what he wants. And
oh, absolutely. I fear the day that I meet that man like one-on-one, because I'm pretty sure we will never leave the table, because he and I have very similar brains where we talk all the time, we talk very fast, our knowledge of things is very expansive, and we tend to go off of tangents off of tangents off of tangents, just from what I've seen in his interviews. So
Oh, yes.
I feel like together he and I will just go off on the rails. But anyway, that's to say, with Wild Party, it was very important to them to have that experience. And when you listen to the score, you can understand why, because that orchestra is tight.
Right.
And especially, I have an audio of the a soundboard. I think it's either a soundboard or audience audio from the final performance of that Wild Party. And if you want to come for me for having that audio, I say, screw you. I listen to it almost every day. The tempos are so fast on that recording. Like, A, it's the final performance, so energy was high, but also, like, mm-hmm. it was nonstop music. So that orchestra was like, get us the fuck out of here. Like, right, this is right. 2 hours of, like, my lips bleeding. But to, like, play at that tempo and to still be that tight on the music, like, that doesn't come from just, like, 10 years at Juilliard. That comes from life.
Right.
So I feel like you and I should start a campaign for audition rooms of, like, if you're going to tell me this is the genre you want, get
you need
a
to have
piano
somebody
player.
That can do it.
Any other traumatizing audition stories where you didn't get it, so our listeners can be a little less sad about them not getting it when they auditioned and did everything perfectly?
Oh, where I did not get it.
I love that you have to now go into like the back of
no,
your brain.
You know what, that's so I mean, it's great, but it also, I don't want to sound like, oh, you get every single job that you audition for.
I mean, if you do, own it, but also like just know that.
Oh, well, Carolina changed. Like, I mean, I
that is
all
fair.
The way to the end, I thought for sure that I was going to be in that revival. But I now understand the reasons that I might not have gotten it, because I am going to be in another show. Mm-hmm. That would have been opening shortly after. But I was like, well, I can stay at least until the Tony. So,
were you already cast in MJ when you were auditioning for Carolina?
Oh, yeah. I've been with MJ now for 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was like, well, maybe they'll just say, oh man, we love him so much, we'll let him stay until the Tonys, because it's a strictly limited run.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least it was then. I don't know what they're going to do now after this. Maybe they'll be an open-ended run, but it was a strictly,
limited engagement.
So yeah. I was like, okay, if they let me in it, then I will only not be available for the last 6 weeks. They'll find somebody to fit. But yeah,
it all just comes down to that sometimes. I mean, some people book their Broadway debuts as replacements simply because like they fit the costume better than somebody else.
Oh, I know it for a fact.
Yes. I mean, I was, guys, I was this close to booking Jenna in Waitress when Jesse Mueller was leaving. When Jesse Mueller was leaving, I was this close to booking it. But unfortunately, I was just too small for her costumes. And they said, we really don't want to take it in.
About. You're the one they were talking about.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top.
Just keeping in theme, we have an obsession today. Antoine, what is your obsession for this episode?
The color purple revival.
Yes, which this is a very special obsession to do because Antoine has first-hand knowledge of this revival. He can give us an insidery look with his obsession.
Yes.
So I'm obsessed that with this being your obsession. So... what, for anybody on this podcast who's brand new, what is The Color Purple?
The Color Purple is the musical about the life and the struggles of Miss Seeley. And everybody should know who Seeley is. I mean, she's iconic.
Yeah, it's an iconic work. I'm just playing devil's advocate for anyone who's like, I've been watching a lot of Friends lately. I don't know what The Color Purple is.
So it's about the life and the struggle of a 14-year-old girl who goes through so many major turns and setbacks. I mean, she has her first child at 14 years old, mm-hmm. and she's basically given away to a man who agrees to take her if he can take a cow as well. And it's about just an empowerment and making your way through struggle as best as you can and still keeping a sane mind and keeping your spirit up, because she was literally by herself mm-hmm. until she met Suge Ray.
Yeah.
I'm in the town.
Yes. It's very much about overcoming
overcoming the obstacles, realizing who you are, being okay with who you are, mm-hmm. and being okay with your sexuality and allowing yourself to just be who you are, where you are, and finding love mm-hmm. where you are. I mean, it was an immense love between Suge, Avery, and Seeley. The stage versions don't get into it as deeply as the book does mm-hmm. for obvious reasons.
But it goes into it more deeply than the movie, which...
absolutely. Yeah,
the
yeah.
movie treats it like, you know, a Sex and the City type friendship, and when like they're about to get intimate, it pans over to a birdcage.
Right.
To which I call bullshit, but I get it. It was the 80s. It would be more isolating of a film if they were... if they treated that relationship more with more depth, but...
Right.
It's still a beautiful film.
You want to know something so crazy about it is that Black people back then did not embrace the movie.
Why is that?
Because they felt like the portrayals were just too not real. But in reality, that was the reality for some people.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the way that we were being portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that was the reality for some people.
Yeah, I guess I can only relate in the sense of every time there's a new work that has a gay character in it, many of my gay friends will post about it on social media and they go like, well, this doesn't relate to who I am and my story. I'm like, not every story has to. This is, you know, one part of our demographic. There are millions of stories for us. I know I absolutely get that, especially at a time when that book was such a still it that book is today a landmark. Like it's iconic.
It's still so relevant today.
Yes, and when it came out, it really kind of took the world by storm. And I guess there was a lot riding on it with a movie version and stories about African Americans still isn't being told often, but especially in the 80s, like even fewer stories. And so there was a whole, like, you know, when there are so few stories about a certain demographic, it's like, well, each story has to represent all of us. And so, of course, it's going to be a letdown for some people.
Right. And let me add this little small tidbit that a lot of people probably don't know. Hmm. So Steven Spielberg came to see the show. And, you know, the ending, Mr. proposes to Celie. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people that saw the movie were like, well, he didn't do that in the movie. Why is he doing it on the stage version? In the book, he does propose. And I think a lot of people would have been more supportive of the movie back then had that part been put in the movie. And Steven Spielberg told us, I wish I was able to put that part in the movie, but it was a like timing. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, we got to cut something out. We got to, and that part had to be let go.
Yeah. That is so
when people see that on stage, they're like, oh, that didn't happen in the movie. No, but obviously you didn't read the book.
Well, I mean, there's so much. The musical is more faithful to the book than the movie is. I mean, the movie's pretty faithful. It's less that the movie changes things so much as that it just omits stuff. Right. Which happens, you know, it's a 2-hour movie, it's a 300-page book, they can't include everything. Right. Weirdly, you can include more in a musical, I don't want to say weirdly, but you can include more in a theatrical stage musical because the way that musicals work, you can relay so much information in a 3-minute song through counterpoint, through montages, right, through dance. So you guys definitely covered more ground with the musical, which I appreciated.
Oh yeah, when Alice Walker came in to see one of our rehearsals in the rehearsal space, she said, this is my book. This is what I wrote.
Had you seen the stage musical before you were cast in the revival?
Yes, I saw it. I think it was either 2008, I believe, is when I saw it.
On Broadway? You saw it on Broadway?
I saw it on Broadway. Yeah.
Do you remember who was Celie at the time?
I believe Jeanette.
Is it Jeanette or Janelle? Jeanette. Okay.
Jeanette Bardell, yeah.
Yes, there is a clip of her doing I'm Here on Instagram somewhere, and I don't know if it's Broadway or the tour, but she does an option up that just like, I'm pretty sure I got pregnant watching it, but it's fine. This isn't about me and my baby. we'll get back to my opinions. As we know, I talk all the time. Let's get back to you.
Okay.
So this revival, which originated at the Menier Chocolate Factory.
Yes.
And starred Cynthia Erivo there, who brought it to Broadway with director John Doyle. They announce it's coming to Broadway.
Right.
What does Antoine think? What does he do? Is he like, get me in that fucking room?
Literally, when I saw, well, first of all, I was like, it's already coming back to Broadway. It literally just closed, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
like, know. Less than 10 years.
It was very early for a revival to be coming back. And I was like, is this real? So I was asking people that were in the original Color Purple that are my friends. And I was like, did you see that there's a revival of the Color Purple? And they were like, what? Yeah, there's a revival coming back. Because, you know, Playbill has a section that says upcoming Broadway shows, Broadway shows that were open, blah, blah, blah. And I saw The Color Purple, and immediately I have to be in this revival. But my whole thinking was it was going to be just like the other revival. Like that was the main thing in my head. Mm-hmm. And then I found out that it was the one that they had did in London with a cast of, I think, 16 or 17. They had, I want to say, 12 or 13 chairs, and I was like,
plenty of chair.
The Color Purple with 17 cast members and some chairs. How in the world is that gonna happen? And it blew my mind. And eventually they started releasing press videos from the London production. And it just sent chills down my spine. I watched those videos 150,000 times, putting out the energy that I was going to be in it. And I got it.
Did the piano player know how to play the music that time?
Oh, Jason Michael Webb knows how to play the piano.
That is good. First day,
also our music director.
So I've gone on record many a time as saying I've been going to see Broadway shows since I was 4 years old. I'm a city kid. I am part of a family of Jews that have been living in New York City for 100 years. We all love theater. And most of people in my family have been involved in theater in some way. Never like in front of the table. None of them have been performers, but like behind the table or like in the office kind of way.
Right, right.
So I was very fortunate to see theater for almost my entire life. Right. Definitely the vast majority. That revival of The Color Purple remains the best sung thing I have ever seen. And I saw it thrice. And not only just like technically speaking, because when I say best sung, I don't just mean like, oh, the notes were there, the voices are good. I mean the attitude and the energy. Because I remember, so I had you, and then I also had Patrice Covington, Don't Be a Star, Be a Galaxy,
it's
also
on Baking on Broadway. Today. Happy birthday,
Patrice. Happy birthday, Patrice. I had her on as well, and I think I told both of you, like, the ferocity with which you, the fierceness, the fire, all three times, I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Can I tell you, dead. Can I tell you why that happened? Because it was genuine. There was no theatrics happening at that moment. This was our reality. These songs are the way that we sang in real life growing up in church, and the spirit, and just all of our, just, you know, the power of our ancestors and everything. It was truly, truly, truly a genuine moment every single day. That's why it seemed so real, because it was real.
But what about trust? What about trust? What about tenderness? What about tears when I'm happy? What about wings when I fall?
So you get The Color Purple, first day of rehearsal. What's happening in the room? How does director John Doyle, who is the seems like the tiniest, most polite, I think he's Irish. Is he Irish, John Doyle?
He's Irish. I thought he was English.
Because he does so much in London. You're like, oh, a literal English man.
I can't tell the difference between an Irish, well, now I can, between an Irish and a London.
English accent. Yes. Well, the Irish, they pronounce their R's, they do. but he's the tiniest little Irish man. How did he sort of establish rehearsal from day one?
He established it, first of all, by telling us, this is your story. I'm going to let you all tell it how you tell it. I'll give you some direction, but the rest is up to you. He literally would say, I have no right to tell you how to perform this. I can give you some direction. And then you show me from your life experiences and who you are, this work. Like, I guess he went to college in Georgia, and he said, this is about the only, that's about the only Black experience that I have. I got on a bus, he flew in from Ireland to America. He got on a bus, rode the bus to his college in Georgia. And that was the first time he interacted or saw Black people. So he really let the experience come from us, and the telling of the story come from us. And he laid that on the ground first and foremost.
That is beautiful.
Which a lot of directors don't do. They say, this is mine. You're going to do it.
This is my vision. Stand here.
Like it or get out.
Yeah.
Him, he let us 98.9% bring it from our hearts and experiences.
Was there a, what was the moment in rehearsal, or maybe it was from the get-go, I don't know. When was the moment where things started to gel and everybody was like, okay, like we have something here?
You want to know what's so funny? John Doyle, in his process, if you're not in the scene, mm-hmm. you're not in the room. You're not allowed to sit on the side and watch. If you're not in the scene, you're literally outside. Mm-hmm. So when we did finally come together for a full run through, and we got to see other parts of the play that we were never able to see, mm-hmm. we were emotional wrecks. It was, when we first started the rehearsal process that way, I was like, well, how in the world are we supposed to know what's happening? Mm-hmm. And it was so genuine and organic once we all came together, having been in our separate rehearsals, mm-hmm. that it was so mind-blowing and just a spiritual, mental experience. It was so good. Sorry, I just had to close my eyes because I was going back into the room.
I mean, you're taking me on a journey, which, I mean, I hope our listeners are on the same journey because I am living. So rehearsal process is done. We go into the theater. We are in tech. Tech is notorious for being a very grueling process. It's a lot of stopping and starting, going back, stopping and starting. How are you as a company able to sort of keep the energy alive during that time? Or is it kind of just like an uphill battle?
Man, we kept the energy because it's so different when you're doing a show that you can relate to mm-hmm. on such a deep, deep, deep way that it just made the rehearsal process just so exciting. Even during the tech time, we were like, man, we're singing, we're having a good time, we're crying, we love this music, we love the show, we love John Doyle and the direction he's giving us. I would say the only complicated part of our tech rehearsal was the positioning of the chairs on the stage, because there was no room for mic tape for spike marks on the stage, mm-hmm. because as you know, it was just a wooden stage of like mm-hmm. slatted wood pieces. Mm-hmm. So you had to know exactly where your chair was, and the way that the stage was is you would think your chair was straight, but your chair would be leaning left because there was no real center point. Mm-hmm. So I think that was the hardest part of tech rehearsal, was figuring out where those chairs go on the stage without spike marks.
Yeah. And I mean, for anybody who didn't see this production, so this was John Doyle, if you are not super familiar with his work, is very known for stripped down theater. He does not believe in elaborate scenery. He does not believe in a lot of pyrotechnics or scenery on tracks, you know, like movable scenery.
Right, right.
There's a term for it. Yeah. I mean, there's like, you can see some dancing in The Visit.
Is that the word you're looking for? Minimalistic?
Minimalistic, yeah. But there's a certain term for scenery, like machinery in scenery. Oh my God, I'm losing my marbles.
I'll where it's not on a track?
Yeah, you know, like where it like slides on and off. It's like automated scenery. But there's a specific term for it. And I am losing my head trying to think of it. God damn it. It's going to come to me in like 5 days and I'll text you. And I'll be like, okay, this is what I was thinking of.
Because I can't think of it either.
Yeah. Anyway, but so his idea of scenery is, you know, unit sets, and anything that moves is moved by the actors. And,
right,
you know, he loves three chairs become a house and things like that. And right. The original Color Purple, when it was on Broadway, was a very elaborate show. It had a big turntable.
Oh man, it had like 50 members. I mean,
yeah, and a huge
350 costumes.
It was a spectacle.
A sight. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, and I mean, to be fair, the Spielberg film of the 80s is also a spectacle in its own way, and it's beautifully shot. But it's this, you know, it's almost a very traditional movie, the Spielberg film, because it's these grand shots that like you could see in an MGM film from the 50s.
Absolutely.
That kind of color, that kind of landscape. Yeah. So, and to be fair to John Doyle, the Manier Chocolate Factory, where this production originated of Color Purple, you know, it's very small. I don't know if you had
I think
ever
it's
been
like
there.
A 99.
Yeah, it's small.
It's super small. Yeah.
I saw A Little Night Music there before that production transferred. And like, there's also no real seats. Like you're sitting on couches. The theater looks like a basement. And so there was no way to transfer this revival of The Color Purple to Broadway and like spruce it up to, you know, become a giant spectacle again. So this revival had a lot of chairs. That was the main set piece. And, you know, actors sort of moving everything around. And there was no real aging process to makeup or hair. So relied on
acting. So it was basically the physicality of the actor, maybe the tone of voice. Mm-hmm. But we used the chairs for like shovels. We used the chairs for Suge Avery's bathtub. We used them for jail cells.
Mm-hmm.
We used them for church pews.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was...
And also not a lot of color. The biggest splash of color is Suge Avery herself in her...
Oh, yeah. Purposely done.
Yes.
Purposely done.
She brings color to Celie's world, and it's, you know, it makes an entrance. So, first preview.
Yes.
How does it go?
It was fantastic. It was just all the culmination of the work... of the emotions just came together so great. It was literally a spiritual moment, and not even like, oh, God and Christ, and not even that kind of spiritual, just like your own personal spirituality, your own personal struggles, your own personal wants and needs were manifested on that stage that night, and it just felt so good.
Very cathartic.
So good. Oh my God.
So I have a two-part question. One is real. The second part is not so much real. One, did Cynthia Erivo get a standing ovation for I'm Here on that first night?
She got a standing ovation every single night. And that is not being sarcastic. From December 1st. Well, not December. Our first preview was in sometime in
November.
From the first preview to January 12th, she got a standing ovation every single time.
So this is where my second part comes in. After that first preview, she gets her standing ovation. You all go backstage when the show's over. John Doyle, does he march over to Cynthia Erivo and go, Cynthia, dear, you need to do that every night now, and then walk out the door?
Nope.
Because, I mean, I'm a very kind person, but if I were a director and she did that on the first night, I'd be like, I love you. That was fantastic. Get a standing ovation every night and then leave.
If anything, John Doyle would have said, just tone it back just a little bit. When I tell you John Doyle is the most minimal person, and he doesn't want you reaching for the same show every time. He wants it to be so organic and so just natural, but he would have never said, aim for that standing ovation. He would rather it not be a standing ovation as to not interrupt the truthfulness of what's happening on stage.
That second part is really not real, but part of me just really was hoping, like, I knew what the answer was gonna be, but I had a secret hope he'd be like, oh no, like, sweetest man alive. But he totally looked her dead in the eyes and he was like, every night now.
Oh no, 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 no. If John would have had it his way, it would have been, I don't want them standing up. I just want to. But hey, what could you do?
It was one of those perfect theatrical moments. And I mean, I'm not going to, I could like gush over Cynthia Erivo, and Lord knows I have, but I want to make it very clear that everything aligned for that standing ovation to happen, starting with she was so right for that part. She gave a great performance, but also what you all did as a company, how that production worked, brought that moment to be what it was. The audience was on the ride waiting for it and was so excited to see this moment of empowerment.
I'm gonna take a deep breath. Gonna hold my head up. Gonna put my shoulders.
Cynthia Erivo, from the first day of rehearsal to the last day of the show, she sang that song just like that. Oh, Cynthia, you can mark today if you... she didn't. She ran a marathon one day during a two-show day and came to work and did both shows. I don't know if anybody knows what a New York City marathon is like, but she ran it and came and did two shows as Celie.
One of the hardest roles. Itself
is a marathon.
Yes. I think the New York City Marathon, something like 33 miles. You run 33 miles, something like that.
Whatever it was, she ran it and came to work.
And then did two more marathons. Otherworldly, truly otherworldly. On top of that, you had three major ladies come in. Speaking of Shug Avery. So the part of Shug Avery is a sort of like jazz singer, chanteuse. Is that how we would describe her?
Sure.
Sure, why not? Sort of like a local celebrity who comes in about a little more than halfway into Act One. And she is the consistent mistress of the character of Mister, who is married to Celie, but it's purely, as you said, transactional marriage. He basically marries her to have her, you know,
take care of his kids and clean his house.
Yeah, she's, you know, unpaid help. You know, she's literally just working for him day and night, and then, you know, sexually abuses her every night. And you see with Shug is actually a wonderful character, not just because she's a wonderfully complex character, but what she does for both the character of Mr. and Celie. She is a moment of color and a ray of light for Celie and helps give her the key to her own empowerment and sexuality. But it also allows us to see a side to Mr. that we hadn't seen up until that point.
Right.
So I love how The Color Purple is not so night and day in terms of its characters. Like, no one is wholly good or wholly bad. There's complexity to everybody.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah, except for maybe Celie's stepdad, who is truly a monster, but we won't talk about him. He's only in the first two scenes and then he goes away. Good riddance to him. But point is, Mister, we see him be this, you know,
monster at the beginning.
Yeah, monstrous man, very toxic. and there's a lot of toxic masculinity there, because you see with his own father, he's a product of his upbringing. But you see with when Shug comes in, you see him be gentle and caring, and so you understand that is in him. Something about him, though, and his surroundings and how his upbringing and sort of how he's been, that makes him sort of not allow himself to be that way all the time, which is why his redemption at the end of the show is quite believable, because we know that that's in him. But also the actor who did it in your production, Isaiah Washington.
Yes.
I was very into his performance. I saw it three times. And over those three times, over the course of Isaiah Johnson. I'm so sorry. That's honestly, I always waffle between Washington and Johnson. And every time, that's why I pause and I'm like, which one is it? Is this the right one? So I deeply apologize, Isaiah Johnson. You were phenomenal in this show. And each time I saw you, your performance deepened. And I saw even more sort of inner struggle with his performance. You know what his performance reminded me of? When was the last time you saw the animated Beauty and the Beast, Antoine?
Oh God, I kid. Probably when it came out.
Are you fucking kidding me? The 91 Beauty and the Beast? It has been almost 30 years for you since you saw it?
Probably, if I'm being honest. I don't know how we grew up different.
get back into it. Disney Plus is a thing. Watch it.
I actually do have Disney Plus, but I only got it for like the gummy bears and Darkwing Duck and, like, you know, the 90s cartoons.
First of all,
so much.
You mentioning Darkwing Duck shows that we're not that different. But that said, I love Darkwing Duck. That said, if you can watch the OG 91 Beauty and the Beast. It's, first of all, it's probably the closest to perfect the Disney movie has ever been. But on top of that, the way they animate the Beast, like his emotional struggle throughout the movie, you see the inner conflict all the time in that movie, right. Which is, again, shows how his arc makes so much sense and is so cathartic for that film. Isaiah Johnson's performance reminds me a lot of that, where you see him act a certain way, but you see the conflict in him where it's like, I don't know what to do in this moment. I'm just going to do what I see men do all the time. And he does this. And it's,
right. It's to not me, good. He should have been nominated for a Tony. I don't know.
I fucking agree.
Who was in charge of that, but that man deserved at least a Tony nomination.
I agree. I mean, I don't like to use the term robbed in terms of Tony nominations when people don't get one, because usually I'm like, you're saying someone else's performance who was nominated was lesser than. I'm not going to say who, but there was one nominee in that category where I was like, I would not have nominated them over Isaiah Johnson. I'm not going to say who, because I'm not that bitch, but I will say there was absolutely a person who was nominated that year. I was like, that should have been Isaiah Johnson's nomination. So without we're on the doubt. Same page there. So moving back to Shug Avery, we have three dream girls in this role. Literally
three.
We have opening night, Miss Jennifer Hudson, Oscar winner, Jennifer Hudson. And then moving on to, was it March or April that Heather Headley came in?
April.
And then August, September that Miss Jennifer Holliday came in?
November. Was it November? It was October, November. Yeah, she came for like the last
couple of months.
3 months or something like that.
Yes. And your part in the show. So what was the name of your character in Act 2, the one who marries Shug?
Grady.
Grady always made me laugh in that dinner table scene in Act 2 where he's like, because he's so brand new to the surroundings, he doesn't know what, like, who anybody is or what the history
right,
is.
Right.
So he's just like, so, I mean, genuinely happy to be there. And then like shit goes down.
Right.
So to watch you just be like, what's happening? I just thought that was fun. Talk to me then about all three women as Shug in terms of what they brought to the role, how that changed your interactions with them, what they brought to the show. Starting with Miss Hudson.
Jennifer is such a great person on and off the stage. Of course, she brought the most powerful emotional vocals to Shug Avery. I mean, there were some songs where we had to raise the key for her at her request, and it made the song so much better and so much energetic. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you're like, are we gonna be able to sing the song that high? And then when you get into it, you're like, I can't believe that it wasn't already in this key.
Mm-hmm.
But she brought so much beautiful power to each and every one of those songs, and she brought such an innocence to Shug Avery. She's just a great, great person.
Yeah.
Never missed a single show. No matter what she had to do, she was at work. And she was 150% every single time.
Dreams. That you had a company of gladiators, really. Just people who came in and fought in the lion's den.
Oh, yes.
I also kind of liked her Shug. Maybe I'm just projecting because I did see her twice. I saw her in previews and then I saw her in February. And what I liked about her Shug, and again, maybe I'm projecting, but it was sort of like somebody who wasn't naturally a Shug Avery, like kind of became Shug Avery because of how she looked and how people treated her.
Oh, she definitely grew into Shug Avery for sure.
Yeah, it was... Again, my brain goes all over the place, but I remember, and this is going to seem random, Antoine, but bear with me. I remember when the Into the Woods movie came out and I had heard some complaints about Anna Kendrick's Cinderella because they were like, she's not really princessy enough in the next half when she like becomes a princess. And I saw the movie thrice again because I'm me, and I and I watched her because I like Anna Kendrick and I actually thought she was good. And I was like, why do I think she's good though? So I was watching her the second time and was like, oh, her Cinderella is somebody who's like not naturally a princess. She really doesn't know how to be one. It's just because of the way she looks, she's been forced to be a princess, but she doesn't know how to stand or act like a princess.
Right.
She just
Cinderella
like
wasn't a princess at first.
She fucking talked to birds. Like, right. She's a crazy girl. So I sort of felt similar to Jennifer Hudson with her Shug, where it's like, she's not someone who was born a Shug. Right, and that's right, not right. naturally in her body. It was just she grew up to look the way she did, and people right. started treating her like a Shug Avery, and right. so she had to take that on, which I right. really I liked. And
right. It
so am good, I projecting there, or do you, blossom. Or was there a lot of that?
No,
in
I it? Agree. There was a great blossom mm-hmm. for her. It was yeah.
That's good. So I'm glad that I'm not just making it up in my head. you know, because it's art. Art is all subjective. You know, there's no fact really. Which I hate because right. I like being right. But right. like, I want to tell people their opinion is wrong, but I can't. I can just tell them right. it's trash. So then we move on. Miss Hudson leaves us in April, and Tony winner Heather Headley comes into the show. And I have to say, so I told you, all three times I saw the show, I was blown away. The last time I saw it was with Miss Heather Headley. It was the night before the Tony Awards. And Antoine? Top three most electric nights I've ever had in the theater. I could not stand it. Take the floor, please. Just I'm
Heather Headley. She brought a whirlwind of energy when she came into the cast. She obviously has extensive stage experience. Mm-hmm. And when I tell you this woman acts from the tip of her big toe to the very end of the longest hair on her head with such precision and such experience. It was otherworldly, truly. And her voice, she has her own. You can, if you're listening to a song, you can say, that is Heather Headley.
Oh, yes.
The way she massaged these songs, the way that she made them hers, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. The way
I'm getting goosebumps she, watching you talk her about it. It's
the
great.
The storytelling that Heather Headley is able to do through acting, through song, through her body, through her mouth, through her words. I don't know. It was spectacular. I mean, to the point where the Tony voters came back
mm-hmm.
to see her performance.
Yes. I mean, there's people who aren't in the community but love theater, you know, we like to sort of project, I include myself in that narrative, like to project stories onto shows and onto situations. So like people say, oh, Heather Headley came in and that's what made Color Purple win the Tony. And I disagree. I think what happened was Heather Headley came in, which as you said, made the Tony voters come back and reminded them how much they loved the show the first time.
Right.
Because opening early in a season is difficult sometimes because you have to maintain
right.
traction.
Opening in December, a lot of shows open like April or the week before the Tony, so they could mm-hmm. be so fresh and so new. But yeah, we opened in December and we rode it all the way through, you know, the award season or whatever. And she just brought a new energy. If someone brings a new energy, of course you're gonna want to come see the new energy.
Absolutely, and I mean. It worked so well on a business end for the producers because, you know, timing-wise, it brought Tony voters back to see the show, and that's just good to remind them right, of the production. Right. And then on an artistic end, you know, it was just such wonderful casting.
Right.
And I don't want to say refresh the show. It did, and you guys were fresh from day one to the end. That show never wavered, but...
I mean, I think you would be accurate in saying it refreshed the show because she brought different things to the show. So it made us react differently, which of course gave fresh and new perspectives as to how we would react to Shug Avery, how Heather's what am I trying to say? How Heather's story was perceived now by Cynthia as Celie. Like, you know, it's now a new actor in old space bringing new energy. So it truly was refreshed.
I guess I would say kept it fresh.
In that way.
Yes, I would say the show fresh. Refresh makes me...
Yes, yes. Implies like the show. That's exactly, yes.
She kept it fresh.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because refresh implies like that you guys started to lag. And as I said,
right, I see what you mean, yes.
Yeah, I never felt that show lagged. She just came in and it was the same amount of energy and kept it as such for...
Oh, absolutely. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. You are correct.
And as you said, like it's... What I love, and this is actually the good side about theater being subjective, is that two different performances of the same role can both be amazing in different ways. And it's just about seeing the new, as you said, like the new colors, the new energy that everyone reacts to, seeing how right. Cynthia's performance changed from being with Heather Headley.
Exactly. Right, right, right.
You know, I would argue it was a more sensual relationship. There were a little bit more fireworks to it.
Right, right.
Whereas with Jennifer Hudson, it felt like there was more of a comfort and a familiarity, which was beautiful in its own right. You know, like a deep friendship, whereas with Heather Headley became this like spark of electricity.
Right.
Yeah, so that was wonderful to see. And then, I mean, God, the goddamn Tony performance, man. That, like, all love and respect to all other shows. We all know that Hamilton is a juggernaut, whatever. And we all know how I felt Shuffle Along should have been was robbed of choreography, of winning choreography.
Oh, we all know that.
Yes. No offense to Andy Blankenbuehler. He's got 3 Tony Awards. He doesn't need my opinion. But no tea, no shade, no pink lemonade. Shuffle Along choreography. I mean, okay. Can we just say... We're here talking 4 years later about the Color Purple revival. That is a testament to your production because that was such a good year. There was so much happening that year.
It was a very strong year all around.
The number of obsessions I have about that year, Color Purple, Shuffle Along, which did you get to see Shuffle Along? Was that something you guys were able to do?
We were not, but we definitely got to see the tap. Number,
yeah, it's I mean
which alone was we were like that the choreography in these tap numbers that we see was
and the storytelling
extraordinary.
The storytelling of that show, speaking of George C. Wolfe, the storytelling of Shuffle Along was mind-blowing. I saw the first Frozen preview, so they had finally, like, the night I saw was the night that they froze the show, and I believe the Times was there because they had a very long, I don't want to say hectic, but a very creative preview process. Like, they really used previews to change things, cut things, add things.
Well, not even that. They closed down for like a week or two to go back into rehearsal, which never heard of in my life.
Yeah, it's very rare. But like, that was it. What I love about it was that was plotted. Like, they did, I think, a week or two of previews and had a week planned where they were going to close down, refigure out the show, to tech and everything, and then come back and do the tweaks from there, because previews are tricky because, you know, the way that sets are automated and things are sort of put into a computer, you can only really make tweaks once you're in previews. You can't do like major changes.
Right. And I will say that Scott Rudin, as a producer, he will give people the time that they need to make it the best that it possibly can.
Yes, he is. I have mixed feelings about him as a human being, but as a producer, he is very good to his production. He is very good to his productions. And at least in terms of the people who are creating the productions, he's very good about allowing them to do what they are trying to set out to do. Whether you agree with what those people do with their productions is, again, why art is subjective, but he always takes risks, and I appreciate that. And he literally just like lets George C. Wolfe do whatever he wants to do. And for that, I'm like, continue, please. That's to say, Shuffle Along, one of the most amazing theatrical nights as well. The storytelling involved, the choreography. It's, when restrictions are lifted or at least loosened up a bit and we're allowed to like go to libraries again, Antoine, I recommend you go to Lincoln Center and watch it. Cause my God, is it so good. It's like, it's a modern day Follies.
Absolutely.
It's a love letter to theater while also deconstructing everything that is broken about it and our society.
Right.
Entertaining and moving. We know it was also entertaining and moving. The Color Purple.
Standing ovation at the Tonys.
Yes, you guys got a standing ovation at the Tonys. You better work.
You know it's so crazy. They say, okay, so as soon as your number is done, step back so we can bring the thing down. We stood out there for an extra 10 seconds. Like, we're not moving from this spot because we're taking this moment in right now.
Yep, that was you all telling CBS, eat it. Which, yeah, do it. Because so again, as I said, Hamilton, Shuffle On, like wonderful shows. You guys won the night for performance, 100%. And I'm not just saying this because you're in front of me and I'm kissing your ass. You've known me long enough to know that like I don't just say shit to be complimentary. Like if I believe it, I'll say it.
Oh, you are 100% correct.
You are 100% correct in your assessment of you, Matt. Way to go.
I should have said 100% correct in my agreement to you not holding your tongue.
Yes. I mean, and I'm not a rude person. At all. I do think that there's a danger. John and I call it toxic positivity in the theater community, where it's like people don't like hearing constructive criticism. It's like, either tell me it was amazing or like get out. And you know, there's a time and a place. If you know, it takes so much work and takes so much out of you to create something, and there are days when you want to hear constructive feedback to make it better, and days where you're just like, just see it and then like leave me alone, I don't want to hear anything. So it's about reading the room in that respect. But in regards to this, in our moment right here right now, you know, I am an open book. I will give my opinion when it's asked. I will not hold back.
I love that.
Performance was fantastic and actually a really wonderful representation of your production. It really, like, because some, you know, sometimes 20 performances, you're like, that was good, but it doesn't really like showcase the show.
Oh, absolutely.
You guys showcase the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I mean, I know it was all your decision. I know you're like, John, yeah. Mr. Doyle, step aside. I got this. Let me handle this performance.
It felt so good, though.
I'll bet. And then you guys won Revival, which
we did.
Which was, and you also, you are one of two shows to win an award that Hamilton was nominated for and didn't win. She Loves Me won set design. They beat Hamilton for that. And you guys beat Hamilton for actress.
We did.
Rightfully so.
We did. Like you said, you hate to say that somebody was robbed, but if Cynthia Erivo had not won that Tony that night, she would have been robbed.
No.
I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
I'm going to say it. She deserved that Tony tenfold.
On every level. And once again, to compare to the other women in that category, it's a testament to how incredible she was in that role, that she was far and away the best.
The women that were in her category were on social media saying, give Cynthia the Tony now.
Yeah, as well they should have. Like, we're talking Philippa Sue in Hamilton, Jesse Mueller in Waitress, Carmen Cusack in Bright Star, Laura Benanti in She Loves Me. Like, all wonderful performances and, you know, could win in many other years.
Oh, but absolutely.
There are just years where there's a specific performance where it's like, there's no question. It is you. It is this. And since the only other time I have felt that way for best actress in a musical in my lifetime, like where I saw the show and I can comment fully, was Christine Ebersole in Grey Gardens in 2007.
Oh,
Every other year I can like play devil's advocate about somebody, you know, because again, art. Subjective, no right or wrong.
And but I remember specifically Laura Benanti on Instagram saying, give her the Tony now.
Because I mean, that bitch has taste. She knows what's up.
She's so real. I don't know if you follow her on Instagram. Well, I'm probably sure you do. She keeps it 100.
Oh yes.
On Instagram.
I like actors who do that. And when by keeping it 100, just in terms of are honest about themselves, about the world, and like know when it's not their turn and know when it is their turn.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. But let me tell you how real she is, and then we'll get back to what you were talking about.
I mean, please, tell that Urban Auntie all you damn want.
She had a bed bug infestation in her house, and she posted it on Instagram. She was like, guys, I have bed bugs. So this is what my room looks like right now. I mean, like, this is what kind of 100 Laura Benanti is.
Mm-hmm.
I respect her for that all day.
Oh, yeah. I feel like Instagram has become, so I use Instagram for two reasons, either like as a scrapbook of my life of moments that I want to remember, or promoting the things that I've worked on. I am not a prolific enough person to post about like the darkness of my life and have people say like hashtag so brave. I am low enough that I would post about it and people are like, ooh, I don't know if I want to hear the realness from you right now.
Right.
But it's, I guess, you know, people of a certain level of success and fame, it's nice to sort of see that, because so many people in the theater world, movie, you know, the entertainment industry in general, where they are always just posting like the blessed life that they have. And it's like,
right,
that's nice. But, you know, are you even human then, where it's like, it's just you with your six pack and a halo top being like, right, staying in for the night.
Right.
Maybe that's just the Instagram accounts I follow.
But can't pay your rent tomorrow when the rent is
right?
Inside tonight, might be evicted tomorrow, but you won't know.
What? Okay. I think you and I should start a trend where we do like the thirstiest photos, like, or like the most thirstiest or most glamorous photos of ourselves, and the caption is just something really dark. So it's, you know, I am like in my most expensive outfit, drinking a really expensive glass of wine. The lighting is perfect. And I'm like, might get evicted next week. Just, you know, something like that.
Right.
That is, I think that should be the new thing.
The pretty truth.
Ah!
I look good, but the truth is, it ain't good.
I'm sorry. The pretty truth?
The pretty truth.
If that is not a trending hashtag, it needs to be. We're gonna fucking put that out there. Ah!
Now listen, all you red hot lovers, you ought to know what to do.
You ought to know what to do.
There ain't nothing wrong with nothing. That's right with both of you.
So tonight, so you win the Tony. You personally win the Tony Award. They hand Antoine L. Smith the Tony for revival of a musical. And you say, I share this with everyone, but I'm keeping it. And then
right. We
go into the summer. It's the summer of dreams. We then go into fall. Heather leaves us. Miss Jennifer Holliday. Tony Grammy winner Jennifer Holliday. Mouth large enough it can house the Loch Ness Monster.
Oh, yes.
She comes in bringing a whole new energy. What is her Shug Avery like?
You know, her Shug Avery is a lot more grounded. To me, I would say Shug Avery vocally, if it were a real life person,
mm-hmm,
Jennifer Holliday's voice would have been that Shug Avery type voice, because it's got that grit and it's got that weightiness to it. That's what we as a cast, mm-hmm, figured out, that this is what Shug Avery would have sounded like. Because in the book, you know, she's a little bit older, which would have given her a little bit of an older sound.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had to change a little bit of choreography to fit Jennifer Holliday. But I mean, that's what you do. You make stuff work the best for those people so that you can showcase them in the best light. And she was the most generous, most giving performer, person on and off stage. But I just think that her Shug brought a little more of the juke joint, mm-hmm, vibe.
I wish everyone could see Antoine right now. His left shoulder is just going rogue and swirling around. I love it so much.
That's I think she brought a very more grounded thing to Suge. Not that the other two ladies were not grounded, but it was definitely a different groundedness to Suge.
Yes. Probably
a little bit more experience and a little more earthiness to it.
Yeah. I did not get to see her, unfortunately, but I had heard wonderful things about her performance, so I am sad I missed it. I will say
she added some of her Jennifer Holliday-isms, the growling and the people loved it.
That's what they came for.
Of course.
Listen, Effie, we all got pain, and her pain went into that Suge. I will say something that I love about this production of Color Purple as we wrap things up. This revival did for me what revivals really should do, which is that it showed people why this work is important and why it should still be done.
I want to add to that my overall experience with the show. You know, you have that one experience where you're like, oh my God, I can't believe this experience right now. Mm-hmm. The Color Purple, to me, I don't ever want to even try to replicate that experience. If that experience never happens again, I will be okay, because it was such a great one that I don't ever want to try to replicate it or to have another experience take over that experience. I just don't want it.
No, nor should you.
Nor should you.
That electricity like that, that lightning in a bottle, that doesn't happen often. You're lucky if it happens once. You're so lucky if it happens once. And I'm so happy that you were able to have that. How would, looking back, what has that show's impact been for you moving on in your career? And your life.
It's the first of all, the family that, again, another connection with people that I call family in the truest way. It's allowed me to be okay with who I am as an artist. It's okay for me to be Black and love myself. A lot of times we get into this theater thing and we think we have to act a certain way or be a certain way to get these certain kind of roles. Mm. But if you have to do all of that, then you're doing it for the wrong reasons. And you know, sometimes we get caught up in those reasons. Mm. And this show has taught me, Antoine, be you 100% all the time. If they want you, they want you. If they don't, they don't. Like, a lot of people say, oh, you did Color Purple and you're able to sing Rodgers and Hammerstein. So, you know, it's just, oh man. Yeah, it's just taught me to be more accepting of who I am, not changing who I am, because if it's for me, it's going to be for me no matter what.
I was going to ask then, like, what is a memory that sticks with you from the show? But now that just sounds so trivial after what you just said. So I don't want to ask it. I mean, unless there's something that is like whole show.
That sticks with me because I can't give anything greatness or anything less. That's not even a right a word, lessness. It was just all so the same and so good and so great and perfect. It was so perfect that I don't ever want to try to replicate that experience.
That is absolutely fantastic. You know what? I'm not going to push it any further. If I continue talking, I'm going to ruin it. Let's wrap it there, because that was so good. Antoine, thank you so much for coming on today. This has been the most wonderful day. Where can people find you on all of the social medias?
You can find me at Antoine, A-N-T-O-I-N-E, L as in Larry, Smith, S-M-I-T-H, 32, Antoine L. Smith, 32 on Instagram. I don't have Facebook.
No. Antoine, we close out every episode with a Broadway diva. Unfortunately, Miss Cynthia has already been done, so you cannot choose her. But I open the floor to you for any other Broadway diva that you would like to close us out with.
Let me think. Does it have to be a musical theater person, or
I mean, someone in the theater or like, you know, musical world? I would
have you had Heather Headley.
Have we? Uno momento. Sorry, I'm looking through the list. Have we had Heather Headley? This is the question to end all questions. Nope. Today we have Heather Headley. That is wonderful. I am so pleased with that. Great. wow. So in the meantime, everybody, this has been Broadway Breakdown. Thank you so much for listening. Go check out The Color Purple and Shuffle Along. If there's anything that, you know, you learned from today, those are the two things to listen to today. Thank you so much for coming on, Antoine.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure all mine.
And here is Miss Headley. Take us away, Heather Headley.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
It's time for today's Lucky Land Horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.